Friday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for the final show of the week. Hope you guys are doing well out there today. Lots of good stuff coming up on today's show. Bobby Nightingale Jr. from the Star Tribune joins me in a little bit to talk Twins. He's been down in Florida for a while. Sorry to disappoint everybody. He says this has been a pretty boring camp, but there's always storylines. There's always things that are going on down there. Boring usually just means there's not a lot of drama in terms of, you know, battling for roster spots, things like that. And that's usually good for a team, right? That means that the plans that they have put in place are largely playing out how they thought they would. There's not, you know, massive injuries to this point. There's not, like, you know, big, you know, underperformance, things like that. A lot of what the Twins thought was going to happen this year has happened so far. But Bobby and I'll get into some of the intrigue, how they're building up the bullpen, where the rotation looks like, and yes, again, Byron Buxton and how good he looks so far this year. The Wild won again, and their new guy, Merritt Husnudinov, made his debut. We'll have to talk about that at the end of the show, but spend some time on that team, as well as Gophers men's basketball losing its first game in the Big Ten tournament season. On the brink now, they might still get an NIT bid, and disappointing finish to the season that had some promise going forward. Still a big step forward, but we got to put a bow at least on the known part of this season after Thursday's loss at Target Center to Michigan State. First, though, what I miss. It's been a Vikings-heavy week, just the way things have broken so far this week. There's been a lot of Vikings talk. That's okay. That's okay with me. I like talking Vikings, and I think you guys like listening to a certain amount of Vikings talk, so I want to run through some of what was said Thursday. The Vikings introduced all of their new free agents. You know, if earlier in the week was kind of focused on Kirk Cousins leaving, I think we're now kind of turning the page a little bit to the new guys, what's coming up next. But Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager, and head coach Kevin O'Connell talked Thursday for the first time since all of these moves were made. That's where I want to really dig in. Two things struck me from what they said. And again, I'm probably going to dip back a little bit into the Kirk Cousins stuff here with the stuff they said. But again, we're kind of pushing past that now. They introduced Sam Darnold, presumably their starting quarterback, or at least you would think so, for 2024, at least at this moment. We'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see if and when they draft a rookie quarterback, how fast that player progresses, how fast that player could potentially win the job in 2024. I'm sure they'd like it to be sooner rather than later, but they've got a guy in Sam Darnold that they're paying $10 million. They're not just going to have him, you know, sit there and do nothing. They're going to get him ready for the season. He's a veteran at this point now, 2018. Interestingly, sorry, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I looked this up the other day. Interestingly, Sam Darnold tied very directly to Kirk Cousins in the past, because if you'll remember, 2018, when Kirk Cousins was a free agent, the Jets and the Vikings were probably the last two bidders, and the Jets actually outbid the Vikings. They bid 3 years, $90 million to Kirk Cousins, but he chose to come here, saw this as a better pathway to win, which I think was the right choice, even if the winning didn't happen at the level that he or the Vikings would have wanted, I think, ultimately. But the Jets at that point pivoted to drafting a quarterback, and they drafted Sam Darnold in 2018. Did not go how they wanted to. They've still not had a winning season since then. It's been a long time since they have had a winning season or a playoff season. But this league has a way of coming full circle. Sam Darnold now here with the Vikings. He talked on Thursday as well. But the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway I had from Thursday was from O'Connell and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. Number one, very interested they seemed in presenting a unified front. And this could be because that's just facts, right? This could be that they've been on the same page all along and they want to make sure we know it. Or it could be because they maybe weren't on the same page all along, but they heard a lot of us talking about how it didn't seem like they were on the same page all along with the Kirk Cousins decision, and now they want to present a unified front. But anyway, here is Kevin O'Connell, Vikings head coach, talking about the alignment that they have. That word alignment came up multiple times on Thursday.
You know, there was complete alignment, you know, with how not only, you know, going into the process, but how everything played out. From a standpoint of our plan for Kirk, everybody knows how myself, Quace, this organization feels about Kirk. And, you know, sometimes things just don't work out. And I think The most important thing is that alignment and the understanding that our plans in place, Kwesi's used the word contingency plans, but those are all discussions and paths and avenues we can take at a very, very important position, no doubt. But in the end, as much as I would have maybe liked to have Kirk here, the right thing moving forward for our team is where we are today.
Listen, I've been to enough news conferences, listened to enough news conferences to know that when a theme keeps emerging, it's something that the people in the news conference want to emphasize, that maybe it's been emphasized beforehand that, hey, you should really make sure you bring this up, things like that. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, general manager here, he was talking about a very similar subject of alignment with the head coach and everybody in the organization on moving on from Kirk Cousins.
And the only thing I wanted to add about Kevin's previous comments is there was complete alignment. You know, this sport isn't such where you can just say on a binary basis, I want that player. I think we've been very clear since we've gotten here that we like Kirk Cousins. We've been very clear that we think we could win Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. But that we have a sport that only gives you a certain number of draft picks, a salary cap, competition versus other teams. It's a resource constrained thing. So we don't get the chance to just say binary yes or no. There has to be planning and strategy involved. And sometimes, when I called Kirk, we joked about the uncomfortable middle. That's what deals should be. And we weren't able to find that. And that's hard from a basis of an appreciation for the player and all those different things. But that doesn't mean we didn't compete for him. Just sometimes it gets to a place where that uncomfortable middle isn't somewhere where you wanted to go, where a different team can go because in their timeline of their team, they're in just a different situation. That's all that can come down to a lot of times.
Now, from the outside looking in, it seemed to me like O'Connell was maybe more in favor, at least. Let's just tamp it down a little bit. We'll get to tampering in a little bit. Tamp it down a little bit and say that that if there was kind of a sliding scale of who wanted to keep Kirk Cousins more, I think Kevin O'Connell was probably in that camp. That's how it looked. That's how it sounded from what they were saying along the way, that the head coach, who had some success with the quarterback, who doesn't have to deal with all the cap headaches day in and day out, was probably more in favor of making this work with Kirk Cousins than maybe Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, maybe ownership. I don't know exactly where they all fall on the spectrum, but it seemed to me like if there was a sliding scale, that Kevin O'Connell is more in the favor of trying to find a way to make it work. But again, we don't know that for sure. We don't know, we could parse what they say along the way. Right now, they are presenting a unified front, and that is the message they definitely wanted to send on Thursday. Now, the other part was actually contained within that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah clip I played for you. Let me play the small snippet inside of it once again in case you missed it.
We've been very clear that we think we could win Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins.
Okay, I got to cry foul a little bit here. They can say that right now, but here is the way I see it. If you thought you could win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, you would have signed Kirk Cousins to a long-term contract a long time ago. Those are just facts. And I get what he's saying in the context of it, that Kirk Cousins in and of itself could be a Super Bowl winning quarterback here, and that you don't always get to make the decision strictly on the player because you've got other considerations. You've got salary cap. You only have a certain amount of draft picks. You've got to think about the rest of your roster. But if you're thinking about winning a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, all of that is part of the equation. All of that is knowing how much he costs, knowing his stage in his career, things like that. If you thought he was a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and let's face it, guys, he has shown no evidence in his career that he is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He has won one playoff game in his career, one playoff game. And again, we're getting deep in the Kirk rabbit hole again, but not all of that's his fault. I get it. I know that. But one playoff win in a long career. He was drafted in 2012. He's been a starter in this league for 9 years. Like, one playoff win, that is not someone who's going to carry you through the playoffs, or at least would seem to be not a person who's going to carry you through the playoffs. If they thought that was the quarterback who could win a Super Bowl with them, they would not have been taking this year by year. They would not have been saying, yeah, I don't think we're ready to commit to you long term. Boy, we sure don't want to lock in a quarterback long term who can win a Super Bowl for us. I got to cry foul. I got to say, you know what? It's fine to say that. It's fine to kind of like give a guy a pat on the back on the way out the door. I just don't think that's true. I don't think that's how they felt about him. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let him get to free agency in the first place. They would have committed to him for multiple years. They would have said, this is our guy. We'll build the roster around him. We'll do our best otherwise, but this is the guy. We've got our quarterback. That's not the case. So I'm just kind of saying right now, hey, let's not say that right now. That's not what they were truly thinking when they let him go. Now, like I said, tampering is completely unrelated to this, but is related to this. It's not anything they said on Thursday, but the league is investigating the Falcons now for tampering, potentially tampering in the negotiations and the process of signing Kirk Cousins. Cousins saying at his introductory news conference on Wednesday that the day before he had talked to members of the Falcons organization, that he talked to them on Tuesday, and players are not allowed to talk to anybody in the organization during that kind of quote-unquote legal tampering period, the negotiating window. That's supposed to be all with the agents and the players, things like that. You're not supposed to be able to talk to guys in the organization. It's all about kind of hammering out frameworks of deals. Then you worry about the rest later. So will be interesting to see what the NFL finds with all this. And again, Kevin O'Connell had suggested a couple weeks ago at the Combine that maybe some conversations were already happening with Kirk Cousins, whether they're supposed to or not, maybe suggesting that there was something already going on. So will it be interesting to see what the league finds and if there's any draft pick compensation that comes with it, because that obviously would help the Vikings be one more little cherry on top on the way out of all of this. Final thing on all this, Vikings introduced all of their new defensive players, including local guy Blake Cashman. They introduced their new running back, Aaron Jones, and of course introduced Darnold. I want to do a deeper dive on Darnold at some point. He's just fascinating to me because here's a guy who, again, drafted high, number 3 overall in 2018, has not had the career he wanted to have. I want to know exactly what they've found in him or what they think they see in him, because the numbers at this point don't add up, but I'm guessing they're banking on some sort of maturity from him that they've seen in the last couple years. He had a better stretch with Carolina a couple years ago, got to learn and kind of take a deep breath with San Francisco as their backup last season. I want to know what they see in him. Do they feel like they can kind of make him the next Baker Mayfield, make him the next one-year guy who can have a year that maybe gets them to the playoffs? I'm curious to see how that all plays out, what they think they see in Sam Darnold. Want to do a deeper dive on that at some point because, for all intents and purposes, he's going to be their starter in 24. Like I said, there's no guarantee they're going to be able to draft a quarterback in 2024, or at least a quarterback that they want to play right away. They can draft a quarterback. I mean, obviously, there's going to be quarterbacks available when they pick at number 11, but are they going to be able to get the guy they want at number 11, or even with a trade up to number 5 or 6? Is that what it's going to take? I don't know, but there's other teams that need quarterbacks. There's 3 teams at the top of the draft that are probably going to go 1, 2, 3 in taking the 3 best quarterbacks. How are you going to reconcile what you have to give, and can you really get up and take the quarterback you want? And even if you can, Sam Darnold enters camp at least as the presumptive favorite to start the season as the quarterback in 2024. What do the Vikings see in him, and what can they get out of him that other teams, frankly, have not been able to do?
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's talk Twins baseball today on Daily Delivery. Yes, oh, by the way, they're in spring training. A lot of stuff going on in March here in Minnesota sports. And let's face it, Bobby Nightingale Jr., who is my guest today, it's not been a real newsy camp. They've kind of done the things they were supposed to do. Everybody seems, they would knock on wood, everybody seems relatively healthy. They kind of have this thing going, not so much on cruise control, but you kind of know what's coming as long as everybody stays healthy for the next couple weeks before the season starts, right?
Yeah, I've been talking with my colleague Phil Miller just about how kind of boring this camp has been. I mean, he's covered a lot more baseball than I have, but my first spring with the Twins, I covered the Reds for 5 years. This is by far the most boring, lack of storyline. I see some writers are doing, what's the top 10 things I've learned from camp. And I was like, I don't know if I could name 10 things. I mean, it's just, you know, fortunately for the Twins, I mean, it's kind of everything's kind of how they planned has kind of panned out. I mean, Byron Buxton's playing center field and Carlos Correa is healthy and Royce Lewis is healthy. And, you know, outside of Anthony DeSclafani in the rotation's all been healthy and everyone's ramped up. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's been ho-hum in terms of everything that we kind of expected coming into camp has kind of played true.
Teams like that, teams like boring, we don't always love boring, but if something's boring for a team, it means that the things that they planned on are generally happening. You did mention DeSclafani, and that was maybe where I wanted to start, because that was the one thing that was maybe a little bit uncertain. I think the last time I talked to Phil a week or two ago, there was some stuff with the injury maybe flaring up again, but that sounds like that's getting better. What's the update on DeSclafani, maybe their potential fifth starter right now?
Yeah, he's throwing, scheduled to face hitters and he's faced hitters in live batting practice sessions, but scheduled to pitch in a minor league game on Saturday, which will be kind of his biggest test. And then if all that goes well, I'm sure they'll try to find a way to get him back into Grapefruit League games. Kind of the thing is, I mean, all the starters are more built up than he is right now. I think he's scheduled to pitch 2 innings. Most starters are at 4, but he still has 2 weeks to catch up and to get to. He's still lined up to, I think, make 3 starts if he stays on schedule before camp breaks. And then with the off days early in the twin season, you know, I don't think that would be prohibitive of him making the opening day roster if he's able to at least show that he can build up before the start of the season. So that gives the Twins some optimism in terms of at least his elbow cooled down and it wasn't something serious, a serious injury that was going to delay him a long time. He still could be on track for the start of the season.
Now, where does that leave Louis Varland? Because, you know, we were talking about going into the year, like, hey, if someone got hurt, he's kind of the next man up. Or do they deploy his high 90s fastball in the bullpen? Where are they at with Louis Varland right now?
Yeah, I mean, he looks really good. He's pitched 11 innings so far and hasn't given up a run. But he's also the guy, you know, some pitchers tinker with stuff. Some guys try different things in spring training. He's in compete mode. So he's definitely someone who's trying as hard as he can to make the team. I still kind of view it as if DeSclafani's healthy, he's probably going to start the season in St. Paul, which it would be a bad case for him. But it happened to Bailey Ober last year, where Bailey Ober had a great camp and he didn't make the team out of camp and still ended up, you know, pitching a ton of innings for the Twins. So I still view him as kind of that sixth guy, just based off he has minor league options and DeSclafani doesn't. And that's probably the biggest separator is you can send one guy to St. Paul and keep him in the organization. The other guy you can't. And you're going to need more than 5 starters throughout a season. I mean, usually a team needs 10 or 11. So they'll call upon him. But I don't expect him to be in the bullpen anytime soon. If that's going to happen, that'd be something, a conversation towards after the All-Star break, I think. But they're going to give him every opportunity to start and kind of continue his career as a starter.
It's an interesting distinction you made between like the guys who maybe are more the veterans who are kind of coming to camp trying to fix a thing or two or add a pitch or, you know, work on this or that. And then the guys who are like, I got to get a roster spot. I got to be, you know, throwing my best stuff right now. Is that a pretty common scenario? Does it usually play out young versus old, or how do you kind of see that play out?
Yeah. I mean, there's some guys who you just know you have a spot on the team. I mean, say you're Pablo Lopez, you have some freedom to try different things. He's not adding a pitch this year like he was last year, but still trying to learn how to throw things in different counts. And you hear kind of like Bailey Ober said it early on. He's like, I really wanted to get, I forgot what pitch it was, but he's like, I would have probably gone fastball there, but instead I tried slider just to see, you know, how my slider is doing at this stage in camp. So those guys, when you know you have a spot on the team, as long as you're healthy, you kind of have that, you know, that ability, that freedom to do that. Whereas Lee Varland, I mean, he admitted it yesterday when he talked after his last start, just basically saying, I have to compete for a spot and I don't really have that, you know, ability to work on things as much. I just want to prove everything I have, you know, to make it as tough a decision as possible to send him to AAA.
Is that rule number one, why we shouldn't pay too much attention to spring training stats?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm someone I very rarely ever look at a spring training stat. Like Phil Miller was telling me, Matt Wallner just got a second hit when he homered on Wednesday. And that was something that was like, oh, I didn't even realize he was kind of in that big of a funk. But yeah, it's usually just because of the quality of competition, too. You know, some guy homers 3 times and they're all off minor league pitchers. I don't think that really shows you much either.
Does seem like the Twins are pretty optimistic across the board, but especially about their offense. I saw our colleague Lavelli Neal wrote about that, had some Rocco Baldelli quotes in there. Baldelli, not, you know, he's trying not to get, you know, too ahead of himself, and he knows that, you know, it's just March and things can happen with injuries and underperformance and stuff like that. But they do seem like they feel pretty good about their kind of platoon possibilities, but just also their everyday guys at this point with the health and, you know, the imagined production you can get if Byron Buxton's healthy, if Royce Lewis plays a whole year, if Carlos Correa is feeling better, things like that.
Yeah, I think the story of the camp right now is Byron Buxton's health, just his ability, what he can do if he's playing center field regularly. This week he's playing back-to-back games in center field for the first time. And there's still 2 weeks left in camp, so he's still building up. I just think that's probably the most encouraging sign, is just let alone not just including his offense, but his defense too. I mean, if he's anywhere close to that Gold Glove level, you know, that's as impactful to this team as pretty much anything. Carlos Correa, scouts say he looks a lot better moving around after his foot injury last year. Royce Lewis, this is his first healthy spring training in years. I understand kind of the optimism from the team. I know they're kind of downplaying and being like, you know, reserved about it. But I mean, if those three guys have at least mostly healthy seasons, you know, if you're counting on 120 plus games from Royce Lewis, who only played 50 last year, if you're counting on, you know, 130 plus from Correa after his play through plantar fasciitis, if you're hoping 100 games out of Buxton, maybe even more, you know, that takes the offense. Gives you the offense a different ceiling than it had a year ago. And I think that's probably the most exciting. And that also builds in for, you know, if some of those rookies take a step backwards, you know, if there's a second year regression, sophomore slump, you know, you do have those stars that you can lean on.
Speaking of that, Edward Julian probably falls into that category. You think, you know, what do you have in him, but Matt Wallner, same thing. You know, even Royce Lewis, you don't exactly know what you get for a full year. You think you know based on the smaller sample size, but like you said, you kind of got that cushion when you've got the known commodities. One very known, at least if he continues to contribute at the level he has for, you know, a long career, is Carlos Santana. How do you think they deploy him? What do you think they've seen so far, lineup wise? How do you think, you know, right, left, however he's batting that day, how do you think they deploy him this season?
Yeah, I think he's going to be your everyday first baseman. And not saying it'll be, you know, he'll probably make some starts here and there at DH, but I mean, for the most part, I think he's the primary first baseman. Just his defense, I mean, he was a Gold Glove finalist last year, and you know, no knock to Alex Kirilloff, but you know, they're going to play the better defender at first base if all things are equal. Carlos Santana, he hasn't hit right-handed pitching very well the last couple of years, but he's been an everyday guy for, you know, 10 plus seasons. I think he's played more games than anyone over the last decade. So, or maybe Andrew McCutchen's the only guy who's passed him. So, I mean, it's one of those, he's always been an everyday guy against left-handed pitchers. I wouldn't be surprised. Yesterday he was, or on Wednesday, he was hitting leadoff. I wouldn't be shocked if that was kind of foreboding that he could hit leadoff against lefties some days. Right-handers, you know, maybe not leadoff, but, you know, a little bit lower in the batting order until he proves he can do that at a high level. But I think probably it moves Alex Kirilloff to more DH and probably see some more time in the outfield than he probably thought he would going into the season, just based off Santana's defense. You watch him there, and, it's hard to tell, like, Gold Glove defense versus average defense, but you can tell he's a really good defender there.
Santana doesn't strike out a whole lot. Their new reserve outfielder, Manny Margot, doesn't strike out a whole lot. It doesn't seem like it was necessarily intentional, or at least they're saying it wasn't intentional to cut down on strikeouts, but it just seems like it'll be inevitable that they strike out a little bit less this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it too, I mean, we would have noticed, you know, Joey Gallo's no longer in the lineup and yes, getting as many at-bats. You know, that's going to cut down on the strikeouts. You know, switching Michael Taylor for Margot, I think they would have preferred, you know, they would have loved Michael Taylor having him back. I don't think it was like he strikes out too much and we don't want him anymore. I think they gladly would have signed up for another year for him, but he's still on the free agent market looking for a 2-year deal. And, you know, Margot, he's a good contact guy. They like his defense, good fourth outfielder, is going to start against left-handed pitching. Carlos Santana, I think just kind of where the budget was, cutting the payroll, as much as it was. That was kind of their option for first base. You know, if they had more money, maybe Rhys Hoskins would have been more of a realistic signing. So I think it just kind of, that's the way they kind of pivoted, not really trying to cut down on strikeouts. They kind of defended that a lot after last season. But I think it would naturally would have gone down, just the Joey Gallo factor.
I think Santana will end up being a really good signing. I mean, I know it was probably budget motivated, but what they got him for, like $5 million, right? Like that feels like he's going to, that's a lot of at bats and a lot of, you know, a better defense than I would have really realized before they signed him. If he at least is like 80-90% of the player that he's, you know, that he was, you know, in his better years, that's a pretty good player still for $5 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you look at like Donovan Solano started a ton of games there, and what he did for the offense, he didn't strike out much. Donovan Solano was a pretty good bet to hit it like around 270, 280, just his style. But you're upgrading defense with Santana, probably a little bit more power. And he's really good against lefties like Solano was. So, I mean, I think it's a slight upgrade from like what Donovan Solano did last year. And Donovan Solano turned out to be, you know, one of their best under the radar signings last year.
Final thing, Bobby, let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. They seem, again, there's a lot of optimism. It's camp, it's March, but they are coming off a division championship. They're coming off of a playoff series win, and they probably feel like they left some wins on the table last year based on how they started the year offensively, where their health was, things like that. But it does feel like they're putting, and I wouldn't say a lot of pressure, but they're putting a lot of weight or expectation on how good this bullpen can be. Where do you see, how good do you think their bullpen can be this year? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at what they did in the playoffs, the back of the bullpen. I mean, all those guys are back. You know, Duran, Griffin Jax looks really good this spring training. And Slider even took another step forward. If he carries that in the season, he'll be really good. Caleb Theobald hasn't pitched in a spring training game yet, coming back from a hamstring thing. But I think he's pitching in a game soon. But you know what you're getting from him. Brock Stewart was kind of the unknown last year, and now he's more of a known product. So I think that's what gives them a ton of confidence. And they're going to have to lean on the bullpen probably a little bit more. I mean, just based off the numbers, I mean, like Chris Paddock is high of the expectations that they have for him. As much as they like him, he's coming off Tommy John surgery. You know, I can't imagine they expect him to throw 160 innings in his first year after surgery. So he's probably going to be you know, they'll be watching his innings kind of like they, you know, people do after Tommy John surgery. So, I mean, like Di Scalfani's had some injury. So, I mean, I do think you're going to probably have to see them lean on the bullpen more. And they're just more experienced in the middle innings. You know, Jay Jackson is 36 years old, been a journeyman, but pitched well for the Blue Jays last year. Justin Topa pitched in some high leverage situations. You know, you might only need him to be a seventh inning guy here in Minnesota, but, you know, has the experience. So, I mean, I think that's where the big upgrades came, was the middle relief, kind of that bridge to the back end guys. It feels a little bit more established than probably years past. And, yeah, there'll be guys who surprise too, like Alcala looks really good this spring. And, you know, if those guys take a step forwards, that makes the bullpen better.
Very good. Bobby Nightingale, appreciate the check-in. I hope for the Twins' sake things don't get too newsy for you know, during the back half of the last couple weeks before the spring, before the actual season starts. But for your sake, for our sake, I suppose it would be nice if there was something surprising. Hey, maybe like a late spring signing. Who knows? Who knows what could be the good news addition? But for now, I think the Twins will take it, and they're still an interesting team. I mean, you know, I think, you know, and right now so much is going on in Minnesota sports. I kind of like the Twins kind of get like pushed to the side a little bit. They're having a boring spring. They're going to be good. We think we know that. All these other sports are happening. Vikings offseason, Kirk Cousins just left. I've talked about that a ton. But like once you get to like May and June, and especially into the later summer months, like people are going to be paying attention to this team en masse. And it seems like they're in a spot where they could take even another step forward next year, if things go well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ceiling's there. The floor is probably a little bit lower than last year just because of less depth. You know, if injuries hit in a massive wave, I think that would have a bigger chance of taking this team down. But White Sox just traded Dylan Cease to the Padres, so the AL Central just lost one of its top pitchers and got a little bit weaker.
Yes, it did. All right, Bobby, appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Good to catch up with Bobby, as usual, does a great job covering the Twins. He's been on the beat for less than a year, but he shows such a depth of knowledge. He and Phil Miller, a great 1-2 tandem on that beat right now. So really always like to talk to Bobby and find out what's going on with that team, especially at spring training, even when, as he says, it's been a little bit of a boring camp in terms of storylines, in terms of surprises. And again, like we've said, that's better for the team than maybe it is for us. Let's finish with the cooler. A couple things here. Maybe an extended cooler a little bit today. Number one, the Wild win again. They beat Anaheim 2-0. Marc-Andre Fleury's been on a roll. Kirill Kaprizov's been on a roll. And their new Russian center, Marat Kuznetsov, makes his debut for the Wild. Does the little things well, wins the face-offs, things like that. I think maybe more scoring to come from him at some point. I think he thinks he's got more to his game to show than what he did, but promising debut in terms of fitting into a team concept, which is important right off the bat, right? You're not always going to jump right in and, you know, have a debut where you dazzle. Can you do the little things? Is an important question to answer before you can, you know, do all the big things. So a promising debut and a much-needed 2 points for the Wild. They're only four back of Vegas now, kind of creeping up a little bit in the standings, creeping up in the projected possibilities of making the playoffs. It's now more like 20-25%. Talk to me after this next stretch of four games. I've got the Blues twice in the next 8 days or so between now and next Saturday. They've got the Kings in there, and they've got Anaheim again. Can they rack up some points in that stretch? Can they make some separation between themselves and the Blues? That's a team 2 points below them. Neither one in a playoff spot right now, but can you gain that separation? So it's really kind of creating just kind of this race where can you catch Vegas? Can you catch Nashville? Could you possibly even catch the Kings? The Kings have got a ton of games in hand, but they have the same number of points right now as the Predators. So can they catch any of these teams? Still a long shot, but they're playing better lately. Seems like they're playing some of their best hockey right now. I know they've had some little slumps, some little skids, some little stretches, things like that. Can they string together enough wins that they're playing more meaningful games, so they're not just playing to get back into it, that they're playing to actually get into the playoffs? That's what I want to see down the stretch. Gopher men's basketball team finish up there. They lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament, the first round on their first round on Thursday. Disappointing finish to a promising year. There might be more to it still. The NIT possibly for the Gophers this season. Again, they did enough to make you feel good and at least feel better about the future. Don't love the way they ended the year. I don't think anybody does. I don't think they love the way they ended the year. Some struggles at the end of the regular season, getting bounced right away in the Big Ten tournament, especially with it being in their home city. But enough done at this point to make you think, okay, the needle is pointing up in year four. But they got to keep that momentum going, because if the needle goes straight back down, all the same questions that dogged them going into year three will be dogging them again at the end of year four. So can they take another step forward? Can they be more than just, you know, fringe of the talk of the NCAA tournament? Can they go into the next season as a, you know, as a team likely to be in contention for top six, top seven of the Big Ten, which would probably mean likely to be in the conversation for the NCAA tournament at the end of the year? That's the next step, right? That's not the ultimate goal, but that's the next step. Can they do that? And can they kind of push the end of this season out of the conversation and make you kind of remember all the good stuff they did along the way? That will do it for me today. A lot of good stuff coming up next week as well. It all just keeps happening. It is March. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. I am Michael Rand, back at it again on Monday.